Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red, White, and You show. My name is Nathan Jackman. Today, we have a very special guest joining us, the former Attorney General of New Jersey and the former Senator from New Jersey, Jeff Chiesa. Welcome, Mr. Chiesa.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be with you.
So, for all our listeners out there, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from?
Sure. I'm from New Jersey. I grew up here. I went to school, college and law school outside New Jersey. But otherwise, I've been here my whole life. I'm a lawyer, and I've spent some time in public service. I'm in private practice now, but I was I'm a former federal prosecutor and assistant U.S. attorney. I'm Governor Christie's former chief counsel. I also served as Governor Christie's attorney general. And for a brief period of time, about 5 months in 2013, I served as a member of the United States Senate from New Jersey after the death of Senator Frank Lautenberg.
Okay. So we're going to move into more of a local issue in New Jersey. Obviously, your former colleague, Bob Menendez, is facing legal trouble for accepting bribes from foreign nations such as Egypt and others. What are your thoughts on the situation?
Listen, my thoughts are I don't know anything other than what's publicly available information. Mm-hmm. I worked with Senator Menendez when I was in the Senate. He was the senior senator from New Jersey. Anytime you see a former colleague in that position, it's hard to see anybody that go through that and their family. The charges are very, very serious. And as the senator was the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, so obviously people are taking this very seriously. He'll have a chance, like everybody else does, to have his day in court. I think that trial date's going to start at the beginning of May. And our system of justice is something I have a great deal of confidence in. And I'm sure he'll get a fair trial and the ability to make whatever defenses he wants to make. And obviously, it's the burden on the United States to prove their case. Senator Menendez doesn't have to do anything. The U.S. has to prove its case. From the things I've read, there are some very, very troubling allegations. But as I said, that's for the jury to decide, not for me to decide from having read the newspapers.
Mm-hmm. And speaking from experience as the former Attorney General for New Jersey, do you think this is a strong case for against Mr. Menendez?
Unless you're in the room and you see the proofs and you've evaluated the witnesses, it's hard to say. I will say that there's some very compelling things that have been reported in the newspaper. The indictment seems to have some very troubling allegations in it. And the office that's pursuing the case, the Southern District of New York, is a formidable prosecutorial agency. So I don't think they're fooling around here at all.
Mm-hmm. Moving into more of a national news area, when you were in the Senate, you served on the Committee of Homeland Security. Recently, the Senate acquitted the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, of his impeachment that was brought about by the U.S. House. Do you have any thoughts on his impeachment, the acquittal, the recent acquittal, and the border crisis that is currently happening? Because I know you've spoken before about securing the border.
Yeah, I will start with the border. I think it's a huge issue of importance to everybody in the country. We've had a chance as a country on a number of occasions to address the border in 2007, then again in 2013 when I was in the Senate. I was one of the 14 Republicans that voted for a bill that would have provided tremendous border security. As a result of that legislation, unfortunately, after passing the Senate, it did not get through the House. And so I think that's a major issue and one that we should all be concerned about. The other thing I think we should be concerned about as a country is we're starting to use impeachment reflexively. And it used to really mean something when a public official was impeached. Obviously, the threat of impeachment led to President Nixon's resignation. President Clinton was impeached about some very serious issues. But more recently, it seems to me that it's become something that's been diluted, unfortunately, in my view, by both sides, not just Republicans, not just Democrats. In this case, from what I can see, and again, I don't have I have publicly available information like everybody else and what I've read in the newspaper. But I hope that we're less inclined to rush to these impeachments. I don't even think he was acquitted. I think the Senate actually just dismissed the charges. That's a bold step to take. I have a lot of folks on the Democratic side that I have a lot of respect for. And I hope that we reserve the role of impeachment for really serious matters and not just to use it as a political tool, which to some extent it seemed to be used in this case. And I'm sure you saw this, Nathan, but the House had to have a couple of votes to get Mayorkas impeached because they didn't have the votes the first time. And I think, as I said, we shouldn't be doing this over and over again. And I hope that at some point we put a stop to it, because it becomes almost like background noise as opposed to a very, very serious mechanism in the Congress to hold public officials accountable.
Now, in terms of diluting impeachment, would you say that the impeachment against President Trump, the impeachments against President Trump helped dilute the power of impeachment, or has it just been over the course of the past 8 years with Trump and the impeachment inquiry against Joe Biden and also the impeachment of Mayorkas?
I think it's a pattern. I don't think any one event does that, but as you develop a pattern of behavior and a pattern of using this important and very serious mechanism for political purposes, which is that's my opinion, what it's been done more recently, that's when it becomes a problem. And that's, I think, a function of the last 8 years, and I think it's made our elected officials much less willing to work together, much less trusting of each other. And that doesn't help us as a country. There are real political differences and real policy differences that people have, but that doesn't mean that we should have make personal judgments about people because they don't agree with our policy positions. And that seems to me another part of this process and why we rush to impeachment, and both sides seem so sure of their positions. And if you recall, when this was done in 1974, the person who led the House impeachment inquiry was from New Jersey. His name was Peter Rodino, and he was he went through with his responsibility, a very important and solemn responsibility. Rightfully lauded historically in New Jersey, and New Jersey is very proud of his service. He was a Democrat. As you know, I'm a Republican, but I admire, I never met Chairman Rodino, but I admire him. The U.S. Attorney's Office building that I worked in New Jersey and Newark is named after him. And so I think that's much more the model to what we should be looking towards, and not this model going on now, which is, it seems like, almost quarterly impeachments or threats of impeachment, because I think the country does not, certainly people who recall 1974 recall what an important tool it was and how critical it was to hold the president accountable. But now it doesn't get there. I mean, President Clinton, as you know, was also acquitted in his impeachment trial. Those charges struck me as a lot more serious than the ones we've seen more recently. But as I said, not being in the room, it's hard to say exactly what information and what other interactions people have had to lead them to make these conclusions. Because I still want to hope that our public officials are taking their responsibilities seriously. But I think when we rush to impeachment and we rush to make accusatory statements about other public officials because of policy differences, we start to dilute the trust of the voters, and I think, quite honestly, make voters less likely to be engaged in the process.
Now, I want to build off your point a little bit about, you, as you said, public officials making accusatory statements. Do you think that former President Trump's accusatory statements exacerbate this and make voters uninterested and more divided?
Well, I think statements that he made have no basis in fact, claiming that the election was stolen, when no credible prosecutor has ever suggested that there's evidence to that. Those kinds of statements, as a former president, not only, I think, make people question his honesty and forthrightness, but also makes a much more incendiary electorate. In other words, it makes people even less likely to trust and come together. When one side's saying the election was stolen, and the other side is clearly, and in my view, rightly saying the election wasn't stolen, that's an example. The comments made in advance of January 6th, that's another, to me, another example. But there have been things done, as I said, on both sides of this. You know, Governor Christie was wrongly brought into this Bridgegate scandal in New Jersey. That's a case that, in my view, very wrongly implicated him. Obviously, he was never charged, but there was a implication that he had some involvement. That was the sort of the media storyline for a long time. And so we have to be very careful as elected and appointed officials about the judgments that we make and about the language that we use, because everyone's looking to the public officials for their insight and their judgment and their integrity. And I'm not pointing to any one of those incidents, but as a pattern of behavior, that does not fill the citizens with the kind of trust and confidence they need to have in the way our country works. Suggesting that the FBI is a politicized organization, it's not true. But B, there's nothing to point to that tells you that. If you disagree with something the FBI does, you can say you disagree with that judgment. What you can't say is that an institution that has done many great things, including keep us safe from terrorism following 9/11, is a corrupt institution. It's not. And so these kinds of statements, and then people latch onto them. And the way social media works now, these things get out, and sometimes it's hard to tell what's a vetted news story and what's simply a statement that somebody made. And so those are the things that concern me about the way or the tone of our politics and our the way we engage as elected and appointed officials. You've got some great people, and not just in New Jersey, outside New Jersey, in the Senate, in the Congress, but we really need to make sure that we have thoughtful discussions, vigorously debate your policy differences, get your facts out, get your information out, make your case, but don't mislead people and don't personalize it in a way that undermines public trust.
So moving into the topic, building off that topic of President Trump, it's obviously very public that he's facing a criminal trial in Manhattan. Do you have any thoughts as an attorney, as a former attorney general yourself, on the criminal trial that's happening to President Trump, and if the charges are based in if the charges are valid, number one, and if what are your thoughts on his rhetoric during this trial?
So the charges, again, not being, other than having read accounts of it and seen some of the reporting on it, obviously watching the reporting on it this week, I don't, other than to say the way this case was developing, at least the way it was reported as developing, was we're not going to do the case, then we were going to do the case. And I think that's, again, the Manhattan District Attorney He's a very credentialed guy, highly respected person. But I think the message that you can get from this, and people can conclude from this, is that there may be political tones to the decision making here, because at one point the case wasn't going to be brought, and then there was a 180 and it was going to be brought. Of the cases that the president is facing, I'm not intimately familiar with them. This one does not strike me as the strongest case. As you know, he's going to be in a courtroom with a jury pool that's going to be much more Democratic than it is Republican, if you want to look at things that way. He's not a popular president or former president in New York City, so those are challenges for him. But the big point here as a former prosecutor is criminal cases should get brought when there's been a crime committed and the people that committed the crime need to be held accountable. Criminal cases should never be brought for any other reason. And I'm not suggesting this case was brought for any other reason, but what I'm saying is when we engage and there's all these different cases out there about the president, the federal ones strike me as very serious cases brought by the Department of Justice. The state ones strike me as less serious cases. I'm not saying the conduct alleged isn't serious. What I'm saying is that the prosecutions in those cases, the way I've seen them reported anyway, suggests that those cases are not as fully developed and as sound as the federal cases may be.
Okay. Now I want to move into more of a, this still has to do with New York and New Jersey, but it is much more of a local issue. The MTA is proposing congestion pricing, which will probably go into effect within the next month or two in Manhattan. And New Jersey is currently suing the MTA over the congestion pricing. As the former Attorney General of New Jersey, do you have any thoughts on if the state has a case against the MTA and if congestion pricing is the right thing to do?
I think that's an easy one from a citizen of New Jersey's perspective. This is New York trying to claw out of a problem that they created by using the money and climbing on the backs of the citizens of New Jersey. It's a terrible idea. It's wrong in my view, in every way. And I hope eventually the courts see it that way, because this is an obvious attempt by New York to shift their financial problems to the citizens of New Jersey.
And in terms of the financial problems of the MTA, they're projecting billions of dollars will be raised from this. So you believe that the MTA is just trying to, for lack of a better word, scam New Jersey citizens out of their money?
I would never use the word scammer. Okay. That has a kind of a fraud element to it. I'm not saying that. I think they're just blatantly just saying we think we can do this. We're claiming that it's in the, and I don't blame them for trying. What I'm upset about is that the issue isn't a, in my view, isn't a New Jersey issue, but they're trying to use New Jersey and others, by the way, other people that travel through New York. But we've, as you've seen, probably, and again, I'm basing this on reporting. I'm not involved in the case, but it strikes me as something that is a wrong decision from a policy perspective and from a legal perspective, and one that the state of New York and its citizens shouldn't be able to use New Jersey citizens who are already overwhelmed by taxes in their own state to be paying an unfair burden and an unfair share of a problem that is not their fault.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Do you have any last words or that you want to say to our audience before we wrap up?
I don't. I would say to you, Nathan, that I'm so impressed that you take the time to engage with officials and former public officials, and your level of interest is impressive. And I wish you the best. Maybe this is an off-the-air comment, but are you, what year of school are you right now?
I am a junior in high school.
Wow. That's really impressive. I imagine that you've developed this interest in politics and public policy over a long period of time, and you're obviously extraordinarily well-informed, much more so than I ever was at your age. So congratulations, and thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Just before we go, the program you are listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ, not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Well, thank you again, Mr. Caiza, for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I'm Nathan Jackman here with my sound engineer, Brian Barr, signing off.